Anybody who thinks that we have not been meeting our obligation with respect to students and education in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is mistaken. We continue to meet our obligation because we have enabled, or we directly tax, $27 billion in educational funding in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Mike Terza, I had a couple of budget fights ago. Say, look, you know, we spend on education. We spend lots. And you go, yeah, that's a nice big number. But when your need is greater than that and you've got all of these cuts on the horizon. And look, you know, the reality is if you cut, it's like the guy saying, pay me now or pay me later. If we don't educate kids at the front end, well, the for-profit prisons will be happy to pick them up and cash in mightily. It's pretty simple. And if you don't have an educated workforce, you're not going to draw employers into the area. It's a lot of this stuff that is kind of common sense, but you've got a party who has said we're never going to raise taxes under any circumstances and, well, everything else be damned. And if you remember Corbett's first budget, higher education in the state of Pennsylvania, they wanted to cut by, I think it was over 50%. And you go, exactly who then picks that up? Well, the students, obviously, and their parents. Now, Pennsylvania has a fantastic state system of higher education, one of the gems of the nation of higher education. And here to talk a little bit about their most recent report, I've got Mark Price, labor economist at the Keystone Research Center, to come talk with us. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, Rick, as always, it's a great honor and pleasure to be here.
So you've got Mike Terzak saying, look, we fund it. You don't know anything. We fund education.
Well, you know, it's a good strategy to talk about numbers and big numbers, put billions on them. But that's not, of course, the issue. The issue is whether funding has kept pace with what it used to be. And certainly, as you point out, it hasn't. Funding has fallen for higher education in particular and for the state system. And that's had some real consequences.
You know, I remember those, you know, the rallies that a number of organizations had around, you know, saving the funding for our state schools. Because, look, even today, there's still a somewhat affordable option, especially for working-class kids and their families.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. And really, one of the things we sort of explore in our work on this is in January, something came out called the Mobility Report Cards. And it follows a rather complex idea. It's called intergenerational income mobility. So it basically asks the question, if you're a kid from a working or middle-class family, so in this case, with a family income less than $73,000 a year, you know, what share of those kids are enrolled in higher education institutions? And then also, it asks the more important question, you know, do those kids, when they become adults, do they end up being in a higher income group? In particular, we look at the kids in the top 40%. And we do find, actually, that the state system schools in particular perform very well, much better, for instance, than some of the most elite schools in the state, you know, the University of Pennsylvania's, the Bucknell's, the private schools. It's the state system schools that do have a bigger share of their students that come from working families but end up as adults in a higher, basically, class because of access to college. And really, the power of the state system here is really basically that it's providing better access. Twice as many students from working families enroll in state system colleges than in some of these elite institutions. And so when you look at all of public higher ed, in fact, almost 60% of what we would define as the success stories, where kids started out in a low-income family and ended up as a high-income adult, almost 60% of those success stories are in public institutions, and in particular the state system. So, you know, it is really a very powerful generator of something that we've, you know, lost in the United States, this idea of economic opportunity, that it shouldn't matter who your parents are, that you should get a shot at a higher income, a higher life if you work hard. And a college education is one of those avenues that remains, and certainly the state system is doing a good job providing that.
Yeah, now, there are those out there who would love to see the state system privatized. What would if we broke this up and handed it off to the for-profits, you know, what would happen to those working-class kids, do you think?
It's quite evident looking at the data that basically you would have even further increases in tuition, right? So access would be reduced for these working-class families. And, in fact, that's one of the very troubling and bad sort of elements of this story and looking at this data. Although the state system does well relative to all the other colleges in the Commonwealth in providing access to working kids, working families, that access is declining over time. And it comes back to where we started, that conversation with Terzai, right? Support for the state system, since the study, we're looking at kids who were in their early 30s in 2014. Those kids attended college back in the early part of the decade. But in the time that's passed since then, the share of students from working families has fallen. And it's directly a result of the fact that the state support for the state system has fallen. As a result, the state system has risen, tuition has risen a lot, and that effect is sort of locking out increasing numbers of working families from gaining access to this one of these remaining engines of upward mobility, right? We've already decimated unions, right, which is another avenue to upward mobility that doesn't require a college education. And now it's quite clear looking at this data that one of those other avenues is being closely reduced, thanks in part to negligence. And I think, you know, you're absolutely right. There is certainly a desire by a lot of folks to sort of carve up public education and, you know, turn it into a private entity. And the first step towards doing that is basically making it ineffective for its role, which is precisely to provide access to more people, to middle-class families, not to, you know, wealthy folks who are going to send their kids to college no matter what.
Yeah, never miss the opportunity of a good created crisis.
I think that's absolutely right, especially in this case. And it's really just, it's devastating, right, when you think about sort of the landscape of where we are and the carnage that we have seen with the decline of unions and the decline of manufacturing and sort of access to opportunity that those two things provided, and now here we are with another route to a better life being slowly cut off.
I remember a kid back during one of the rallies. I was one of the speakers. They were nice enough to ask me to speak, and one of the kids that I met before I went on came from one of the state system schools, and he said, you know, if they cut the funding and they take away my access to this, there's nothing for me to go back to. He said, I'm the first in my family to go to college. My father tried, my grandfather tried, but they just didn't have the resources or the ability to do it. And they, you know, they went back to the mill in the town, and they had good lives. He said, the mill's gone. There's nothing for me to go back to. This is my only avenue. And I still remember that to this day, because, you know, whenever I hear them saying, well, we need to cut more funding and we need to destroy this system, I think of that kid, that this is his only shot.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It is really about choking off opportunity for these kids, and it's devastating when you think about the changes that we're seeing in the broader economy and folks who talk a very good game, right? The kind of cheap talk of, oh, well, you know, we don't need to raise the minimum wage. We don't need unions. You just need an education. And here we are looking at one of those gems of you know, upward mobility, and indeed they're not even funding that, and it's reducing directly access to working families to the state system.
So any suggestions for people? I mean, look, the budget is still being hammered out. I don't know what the numbers are this time around, but, you know, the last several budgets have not been kind to working families. I know Governor Wolf has tried, but, you know, with a Republican legislature, there's not going to be a lot of relief for families. You know, what's the marching order? What should people be doing?
Well, the marching order, you know, is first to recognize that we are in terrible situation with respect to state budget. And it is a direct result of cuts in corporate taxes that, you know, were made years ago when revenues were more robust, when the economy was stronger. Those cuts are now showing up as large deficits, you know, billions of dollars of money that we don't have. And it's making it almost impossible for any particular area in the state budget to see a meaningfully large increase, to recover a lot of those cuts that were made during the Corbett era, to sort of recover the ground. So you're seeing very limited funds available to basic education, even some limited funds available to the state system, but they don't amount to enough to reverse these trends. So I think really the marching order is for people to recognize that they need to find another source of revenue to help increase in a meaningful way our investments in things like infrastructure, investments in, you know, the infrastructure of higher education in basic ed. So, for instance, you know, a severance tax is a nice way, especially when you realize, you know, we were very lucky that we're sitting on top of this massive natural resource. It makes a lot of sense to tap that resource and devote some of the revenue from that to investing in a much more sustainable resource like, you know, higher education, human skills, capacity that's really going to make a difference in the economy in the future. We also, as I'm sure you've talked about on this show many times, also have put forward proposals that would raise the tax rate on income from capital gains or dividends. Again, sort of the spirit being the highest income groups have benefited a lot from
Certainly.
The investments we have made, right, in the economy. And it makes a lot of sense to ask a little bit more from them to help, again, pay for investments in things like higher education.
Yeah, maybe we could take Donald Trump's idea of priming the pump, and the Republicans could run with that.
Priming the pump. I hear he invented that phrase.
He did.
Poor John Maynard Keynes.
Yeah, look, I'm at the point right now where I'd be happy to give him credit for that if they'd be willing to actually do it.
Yeah, could if they could actually find the pump. Yes, I agree. I think we can all agree that we'd like to see some priming of the pump as opposed to whatever it is they're doing now.
There you go. Good stuff. Mark, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you.
Hey, Rick, as always, a great pleasure. Have a good one.
Our good friend Mark Price, labor economist there at the Keystone Research Center. You want to check out their work? We'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com of how you can take a look at that. Quick break. Right back.
Red roses too. They're blue for me and you, and I say to myself, oh, wonderful world.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.